When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. Today we have a special guest, Dom LaMorta. You'll hear throughout this interview, but Dom works hard at everything that he does, and you can see why he's been a winner at both the high school and college level. Stay tuned to hear about his development as a player, the craziest games he's been a part of, and his experience training NBA guys. Thanks for tuning in, and now let's get into the episode. We're here with the first virtual interview of Not Even D2 with the boy Dom LaMorta. How you doing, bro?
What's up, KJ? How you doing, man? Glad to be on and have a little conversation with you. It's going to be fun.
Yes, sir, bro. I'm already knowing. So usually I want to just talk about college with guys, but your high school career is very unique, and I feel like listeners need to know that aspect of you before we dial into post-college and your college career. So,
yes, sir.
You went 49-1. You won a state and a federation championship. What about that Scotia team made that team so dominant in Section 2? Because if you say I went 49-1 to me, I'm going to think you played in the worst section, but you played in Section 2 and Class A, so there's real talent in that. What about that team was so important or so special?
Well, we had a really good group of people that all shared the same mindset. And you said, well, yeah, you get that at a lot of schools, but there's something about us that was just like, we were very hungry. We all really were competitive, and we all really genuinely loved the game. And we kind of knew like what we had early on, not to the point that we knew we were going to be 49-1 and go on the crazy run. But we knew we had guys that were committed and wanted to do it like every single day. I mean, we used to literally probably like 9th, 10th grade on, we were in the gym almost 6 out of 7 days, if not 7 out of 7 days a week. And this was all year round, and that's all we did. A couple of us were playing baseball here and there up until like 9th, but then we decided to fully commit. And then we had coaches that were fully committed just as like we were. So it was like a perfect situation in terms of the commitment level. And then guys kind of were able to push each other, like I said, on a daily basis. And it was always like, yo, are we working out today? And if someone was slacking, we would hit them up and be like, yo, are you working out today? So it was just like a really good atmosphere and a really good culture. And then obviously we had the coaching and the guidance from, you know, three Hall of Fame coaches. And Jimite was his last name, James Jimite, who's going to be actually in the Hall of Fame already. Mark Sawsville, who's in the Hall of Fame. And then a guy that passed away, Scotty Stapir's father, who was one of the biggest influences that we've all ever had and just knew the game really, really well. And he was the one that kind of developed us throughout our career. So, I mean, we had a really good group of guys, and we started, to be honest, now that I think about it, we were all together in some form since like kindergarten, first grade. Wow. So, I mean, we were really like built up from the beginning, and then obviously with the work that we put in, we earned it, you know what I mean? So it was definitely something I'll never forget.
So I can kind of tell that you guys played together all your life. You see programs in Section 2 like your group and Shenandoah, those guys, like you can't guard them. They're so systematically structured. It's hard to compete against those group of guys. And you guys had a ton of talent on that Scotia team as well. I used to watch you guys when I was younger, and it was always like, Dad, can we go to Scotia, go watch them? But yeah,
that's so sick to hear.
Yeah. it's hard in high school too, like to have a whole group of guys that are buying in instead of like where I went to school is 1 to 3 people that were going to work out every single day and go hard. But if you have a whole roster, that's going to set you apart easily.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the biggest thing. It's like you said, there's a couple guys here and there, but when you get like a whole group of guys, it's totally different.
Yeah. You graduate and you commit to Alfred, but you're a year ahead of your point guard in high school, Scotty. We touched on him earlier. Mm-hmm. How important was it for you and Scotty to remain teammates, or was it just a coincidence that you both ended up at Alfred?
So the whole story was, not a lot of people know this either, but I started actually at Cortland, SUNY Cortland, and that's where I committed originally. So I was there for probably about a semester. I was young. I was only 17 when I graduated high school, so I was a homebody. Like, we were from Scotia. That's all we did was hoop, and we were in Scotia. We traveled to New York City and stuff for strictly basketball terms. We weren't going anywhere else unless that was for basketball. So I went away, wasn't ready for it really as a person, as a player. I was definitely, as a player, polished enough to be in the situation, but it was just, like I said, it was new for me because I was so used to being in that Scotia system. We were so good. And then, you know, you get to college and things aren't the same. It's just different. You're around different people, around different voices. And you came from a program that literally never lost. And then you're getting into a program around kids that, like, you know, haven't had the same guidance. So they don't really know the same types of things and don't look at things the same way. So it was just like a culture shock for me. And I had to really understand that it's going to be different. I have to kind of adjust my mindset to the atmosphere. So at first, I really wasn't ready for it. It was a bigger school, bigger program. And then once I decided to leave, I came home and went to Schenectady Community College just to do some classes and stuff to get my credits rolling, and then was kind of searching for a different place to go. And then Scotty called me, Coach Phillips called me, and we're like, you know, we have a spot open if you want to kind of join us. You know, Scotty's here, and it'd be like a comfort for you to kind of join us. It's a smaller school. So I went out and visited. And you know, for being in Alfred, it's not like the most luxurious place ever when you first pull on campus, you know? Yeah, you know, so it's like out in the middle of nowhere. So I'm talking to my dad. I'm like, you know, I like what they have to offer and what they're saying, but this is like really in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, I don't really know like if it's the right place for me. So we kind of went back and forth. And because Scotty was there, it was kind of like, you know, I'm going to do it because I know I'm going to have someone there. Whatever happens, I'm going to have someone there that I know will share that same mindset with me. So I decided to do it, and then obviously got there, and the rest is history.
Yeah. So what year were you when – because I never heard this. What year were you when you ended up at Alfred?
So I was academically a sophomore.
Okay.
But because I never played, I didn't even start the season with them. I tried out, was on the team, went through a couple practices, and then I just told Coach Spann, who was the coach there, just retired there, Hall of Fame coach, really good guy that recruited me for a long time, who I have a ton of respect for. Mm-hmm. Just kind of told him, like, yo, I'm really not in a comfortable situation. They tried to tell me, like, yo, we really want you here. You know, you're probably going to be in the rotation as a freshman. So it wasn't one of the situations where I wasn't really, like, playing. I just wasn't comfortable.
Yeah.
So I went there, and I still have all 4 years. So that year, that gap that I never played or I didn't play was – that's another – I didn't play, and I came back for that freshman year at Alfred, bro, and I was so rusty I couldn't even
– wow.
I felt like I never played basketball.
I mean, taking a year off, you're going to be like – it's just different. Like, even for me, I got hurt last year, and I didn't play the last 20 games of the year. And coming back now, just practicing with the guys is like I have to get – back into shape of things, and I'm excited to see how I play during the season, but the first game or a few games might be a little rough.
But yeah, it's just the timing of everything and getting that type of feel back of, you know, getting up to speed and being in shape, and it's something you got to be in to experience and get back to before you're like at your peak performance in that top, you know, top level of your game.
Yeah. What was the first few years of college basketball like at Alfred for you? Were you guys winning games? Were you playing a lot? What was going on?
So my first year, I mean, I didn't play a whole lot at all, to be honest with you. And the program was kind of Coach Phillips, Russ Phillips, who was my guy that coached me while I was there, had just taken over a couple years prior. They had a couple seasons where they were won some games. They got to the playoffs a couple seasons. They had a couple down years. But when I got there, our first 2 years were really shaky. We didn't – and this is no knock to anybody, but the way that the leadership was at that time wasn't really built out. There wasn't a relationship between the older guys and the young guys. And you know how important that is being on a college team. It needs to be like
arguably most important.
Yeah, it's got to be chemistry, and guys have to feel comfortable. So those first couple years were very tough for me because I didn't really play a ton, and I came from a program where I was literally playing every minute of the game. I didn't come out at all unless I was in foul trouble or literally asked for a break. So, you know, it was humbling, and I had to kind of adjust to the situation. And for me, you know, it got to the point and I had to make a decision as a player. Like, a lot of kids just see, like, when they don't play, they kind of just give up and they go to something else, whether it's like partying or start talking to chicks and whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the reality of the situation. For me, I already knew, like, basketball was my thing. Like, and I was there for one reason, and that was to obviously have a really good career, but more than anything was to bring a championship there. So it was my goal. So I just literally, from the freshman, that first freshman season, when I wasn't playing, I would go to the weight room after every game in my jersey and lift. And then I would stay after, I would shoot and be in the gym in my jersey. And then I would go into the locker room and everybody left, hand my stuff in, and I'd go back up. And at first it was frustrating because it's like, bro, I'm putting all this work in and I'm still not getting minutes, or I'm getting 2 minutes here and then he's taking me out. But I knew over time that eventually, you know, like, things would add up and get to where I wanted to be.
Yeah. It's very hard as a underclassman to play in any role, but especially like a college basketball bench player, you're going in and you're trying to learn so much. It's a different pace. It's a different level. You're trying to learn. And then you know that the person playing in front of you is going to come in if you make one or two mistakes. So you just got to find the balance of, I'm trying to learn and trying to play the best basketball at the same time. But oftentimes it's really hard for underclassmen to be successful.
Yeah, it's super, super. That's such a tough, like, part of the experience is those first couple years. If you don't go in and play right away, I see guys all the time now, that what I do, people just transfer or they quit or they don't play anymore because they hit that first year of adversity or that first, and they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to go just through like it. That. They don't want to even experience it because they're not used to it. So I think that's where, you know, you have to create, like, coaches have to create relationships with the young guys and be in their ear and have it be an atmosphere in the program where if they don't feel comfortable, they can come to the coach and talk to them and be honest with them and be like, yo, like, I don't feel comfortable right now. I'm not playing. This is hard for me. And the coach has got to be able to say, yo, stick with it. We got you. We want you to be a part of this. And not a lot of programs do that, dude. Like, you see a lot of coaches that are just like, oh, I don't really – there's 25 kids on the roster. Like, I have my 7 or 8 that are going to play, and the rest of you guys, like, figure it out. You know, like
– That's a great analogy.
Crazy. It's a cutthroat business, because what the kids don't understand, too, now that I'm older and I've gotten out of it, like, that's how those coaches are feeding their families. Like, they're getting paid to coach, and that's their job. So if you don't produce, like, I got to take you out and try and figure it out with someone else, you 100%. Know? But I think building, like, cultures and programs that last is about those relationships and those connections, even if they aren't playing. You got to keep them comfortable. So it's definitely, that part of college is so hard.
I don't know if you want to go into coaching, but it sounds like you'll be a pretty good coach in the future.
Yeah.
So going into senior year, I just want to hear, like, what was your mindset? You won Empire 8 first team, you were a D3 Northeast Region first team player, and you won the E8 tournament MVP. So what was your mindset going into that season? What was your work ethic like? Tell me about that.
Well, like we talked about, those first couple years were definitely humbling, and I don't like to get to that without kind of telling the story behind it, because there's no way I would have got to that fourth year without the first three, even the first four, because I took that first year off. But I don't like to be egotistical or talk about, you know, myself a lot. I'm a team guy. I'm confident in the way that I, you know, play the game and you know, like, the way that I treat people and stuff like that. But I don't think there was a freaking harder worker in terms of basketball, bro, in any division of basketball. When I was there, bro, that's literally all I did. You can ask all the guys that were – to the point where I look back now, I'm like, yo, this is like a sickness. Like, that's literally all I did, bro.
Like,
I would get up, I'd go to class if I had it. you know, I would, if we had a workout in the morning, obviously in this part of the year for you guys, like you get up to your 6 a.m., your 7 a.m., whatever it is. I go to class. I go back down. I work out. Go back to class, eat some, go back down and work out again. And I used to realize it, like, that it was just, like, different when I used to be in the gym and people used to walk in and be like, bro, do you ever go to, like, class? Like, these people used to look at me and go, like, bro, like, I don't even understand how you do this. Like, every time I come down here, you're, like, here. And for me, like, yo, like, everybody used to go to their dorm or they hang out. Like, that's literally, like, what my comfort was, is being in the gym, knowing I was being productive, you know, like, being in the weight room, you know, making sure that my body was up to par, because I knew, like, I had to be in. You walk into to college basketball as a freshman, you see grown men playing basketball. You're like, bro, I got to get my body to a point where, you know, I can take the bumps and the physicality and stuff like that. So that's literally all I wanted to do was win a championship. Okay, that's like literally like when I got there, bro, like I looked at the wall every time I was in there. I'm like, bro, I'm going to do this. Like, I don't care before I leave, like what happens, like this is what I'm going to do. So it was like that for 2-3 years. And the other thing too that I like to help kids out with now when I do the training stuff is the mental stuff. Like, I had some really tough mental battles when I was in college with like performance anxiety. I really, really struggled with it. So like my sophomore year, I was in a really good spot. We played at Bonaventure in the exhibition game. And I had like 17 as a sophomore against, like, you know, high, that's like pretty high level Division I basketball right there. Yeah. So I was feeling really well. I was playing really well in practice, but for whatever reason, when I got into games, it was different. You know, like I couldn't figure out how to get past that mental stuff. It really bothered me. Like, my anxiety would like just totally make me a different player. Like, I had trouble breathing when I was playing. I would just think bad stuff. So that was another thing that kind of like I had to battle throughout the college situation as well as, you know, like developing as a player. So when I got to that senior year, it was kind of just like, yo, I've come this far. I've done things behind closed doors, and I know that I'm a really good player, and I've had people tell me that, and now it's like you got to figure out how to show it in front of people and get rid of that anxiety. So yeah. I did battle it, but it was more of a situation where I'm like, yo, this is my last year, so I'm either going to figure it out or I'm not. You know, like this is it. And we had that year, the crazy part is we had, I think it was 11 freshmen. So like all the guys that you played with last year, you had Brewster, Elliot, and you Jay, obviously Eddie. Played with Cole, Jay, Eddie, all like guys, all man. Those guys were, they were, yeah, those were 11 freshmen, bro. We had like 4 seniors, and then it was like Kev and Ant, Rufino. And I'm trying to think, do we have, I hope I'm not forgetting anybody because I sound like an idiot. Well, Jeremiah and Cole were the year under us.
Yeah.
So that was like 10 freshmen. Those guys were the sophomores, the juniors, and then us. So we had to figure out as seniors, me, Sage, Pat, and Scott, how to manage, like we talked about before, how to make those freshmen feel like welcomed and a part of things, you know? So it was more than just like, yo, I worked mad hard. We worked mad hard. We're going to get here and do this. It was like we had to really manage, like, each personality and make sure they all felt comfortable. Like, you know, Elliot as someone that's like, bro, he doesn't even talk. Mm-hmm. Like, Elliot didn't want to talk. He was shy. Brewster, like, you know, he battled his headaches. Another kid that was very shy. Like, they were talented, but we had to figure out how to make them comfortable. So I knew that, like, I was someone that led by example, but I didn't really use my voice a ton leading up to that year. So I knew that I was going to have to be a vocal leader as well. So I had to get into those guys, and you had to figure out their personality. You had to hang out with them outside of the gym. You had to make sure that they were doing well with things, that they were feeling, you know, any type of anxiety or weren't doing things. You had to figure out how to, you know, get them to be confident, because we needed everybody that year to do what we did. So we got the best out of almost everybody. Elliot was the freshman of the year. Brewster was really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, like Cole and Jeremiah and Ant and Kev did their thing. And then all those other freshmen, like, showed up every single day, whether they were, you know, playing or not, and understood, like, what we were all doing as a unit. And that's what we wanted to win, because we knew we had a chance. So that was that part. That was really tough. And individually, it was, you know, like a feeling out process at first, because I'm a, like I said, I'm a team guy. So I would get into the game and I'm like, yo, I want to get guys involved. But then I played the first couple games and I'm like, yo, we need to score to beat some of these teams. Mm-hmm. And I got to like, I think it was like the third or fourth game where I'm like, bro, I'm going to probably have to shoot like 20 to 25 times some games to like win us these games. And I'm like, this is not how I'm used to playing, because like in high school, I was like 5 to 10 shots because we all could shoot and we were all like team guys. But I knew like, yo, I put in the time and coach was telling me like, bro, we need you to shoot. We want you to shoot. Even if it's like a bad shot for you, it may be our best shot that we're going to get. So I'm like, yeah, like that's all I needed to hear. Yeah, that's all I needed to hear as a player. Like that kind of flickered that anxiety that I was having, that kind of like flicked my confidence on. I'm like, they want me to do this stuff that I practice every single day. So, you know, I had a couple games in the beginning where I had that feeling out process, and then I just started like figuring it out. Like I was putting the ball in the basket in a bunch of different ways. I was getting to the line. I was shooting a really high percentage from three, and I just got really comfortable. So that year was special because I kind of put everything that I worked on for so long together and was scoring like pretty effortlessly. Like I was shooting from, you know, like wherever I wanted to. I was getting into the mid-range, and I had developed my mid-range game that past summer. So I was super comfortable with that. And then I was getting downhill because I was like a bigger guy and scoring around the rim and going to the line. So it was a special year. I don't want to babble on and go crazy, but like I started to figure that out along with the team stuff, and it was just crazy.
No, this is a great conversation. I love you babbling on about it. I want to circle back to the performance anxiety aspect you were talking about.
Absolutely.
I feel like there's a lot of people that go through it, and the only advice out there is just like practice. If you have anxiety, just practice. But guys like you said, I practiced every day. I was in the weight room. I was getting shots up all day. What advice do you have to people dealing with that anxiety?
Well, you know, performance anxiety is such a misunderstood subject, especially in sports, because like you said, you know, a lot of people are like, yo, you're not playing well. And they think it's just because you're not putting the time in. And that's not necessarily like the truth for most people. For some people it is, but for most people with that type of stuff, it's not the truth. You know, for me personally, I can only speak on what I've kind of, you know, went through. I have what they call like OCD. So OCD is kind of like, there's different forms of it, but with sports, it's like you go to the point where you're like exhausted. Like that's all you can do. You think extra reps and extra work are always going to generate, you know, like better results. And with OCD, you go to like, it's crazy because you'll go to like a certain number, like you can't leave the gym until you get this done, or you have to like, you know, shoot this amount of shots before you can leave, or you got to do this amount of, so whatever. So I didn't realize this in college, but when I got out, I was like, yo, there's definitely like something messed up with me because this is like to the point where this is like all I do. I like see these people come in the gym for 30 minutes and are good and leave and come and like kill. And I'm here for 3 hours and I'm not killing like they are. Yeah. Like I know I can, but I'm not. So the biggest thing I would say to people is, and I actually was talking about this today with some of the kids that I worked out. The biggest thing with anxiety is, you know, preparation is the thing that helps people the most with their anxiety. What I mean by that is like people get anxious about situations because they're not prepared. So if you can go into the gym and do X amount of work every single day and know that you've worked on this thing when you're in the gym, whether it's, you know, like dribbling or whatever it is, right? But then there's another element to it, because you can do all that work and then still not perform. Some people, and I think this is true for most people, can't really control it. Like I knew that like when I was in college, like the easiest way I can explain this to you, that you'll understand it, is like we have like adrenaline as athletes that we produce like before games. We get pumped up and we're ready to play and stuff like that. You get into a game, you start killing, you have that adrenaline. I used to have the most adrenaline ever running through my body before the game would start. Like 4 days before the game would start, I would have adrenaline running through my body that I couldn't even control. Like it was just like boom, 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 boom. And I was like in class thinking about the game on Friday and it's like Monday, bro. I'm like, bro, we don't even play for 4 days. Why am I nervous about it? And I couldn't, like, to the point where I was like, my breathing was off. Like I'd have, sorry, crappy practices. Okay. And I'm like, bro, like, we haven't even got there and we're playing a team that we've beaten every single time, you know, we've played them in my career. So like, what am I? So my biggest thing is what people don't understand is sometimes it's an internal thing that we are born with and we can't control, or something that we adopt as like throughout our childhood or whatever. And it needs to be addressed with somebody that is a professional or somebody that understands that type of stuff. So for me, the biggest thing was I have to be able to, you know, function as a human before I can even think about going to play a basketball game, you know? So
yeah,
like the adrenaline that I had running through my body was to the point where I couldn't even control it. And then I would go out and play in front of, you know, at sometimes like Bonaventure, you're playing in front of thousands of people. You know, like certain games you're playing in front of a lot of people. Sometimes you're playing in front of nobody, but I couldn't control it. So for me, I figured it out, like, not even really, to be honest, as crazy as it is, but I didn't even have it figured out my senior year. It was more when I got out of school. And the thing that helped me the most was getting on a medicine that kind of lessened that adrenaline for me. It kind of reduced it, allowed me to cope with it and control it. And then I was able to go into, you know, workouts, games, stuff like that. And I was okay with like missing shots. And it was weird for me at first because I was so like perfectionist about everything. And I was like, yo, something's like up. Like, I don't feel as motivated about it. I still knew I loved it as much, but I'm like going through these games and I'm like missing shots. And I was just like chilling. I was like, cool. I'm like, oh, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was cool because I started to figure it out. And then like after I got out of school, I was scoring. Like I had a couple of like summer league games against like legit guys, dudes that played in the G League, guys. I had like 61 game. I had like 51 game. I'm like, bro, I'm like bugging. And I feel like normal. So it's a long process and I still to this day haven't figured it out, but I think a lot of people need to seek help and don't be scared to like reach out to people. And maybe you don't figure it out with the first doctor, or the second doctor, or the first sports psychologist or the second sports psychologist, but don't stop because you haven't figured it out or they don't give you the feedback that you want. You have to be experimental with it. You got to try different things. You have to really work on it the same way you would work on your game, because it's like something you really have to work on and get good at to be able to cope with it. And then obviously go out in front of, you know, X amount of people and perform. So my biggest advice would just be, don't be scared to seek help on it, because it can totally change your life and change your sports career.
That's great advice. Like, I deal with performance anxiety a lot, and I'm sure a ton of people around the country do. And I've never heard someone put it like that, but everything you said, I'm definitely taking in my head, and yeah, I'm going to use that to my advantage.
I'm definitely the type of person, too, that if anybody listens to this, like, if you ever want help or advice or anything, I'm open book. If anybody wants to reach out and needs help with it, I'm always there, including you. Love.
Let's fast forward to playoff basketball, playing for Alfred. You guys hosted the E8s, and the energy just looked crazy. When I came on my visit here, that's something they advertise, is you can play in front of this crowd, and that's one of the reasons I was like, yeah, I want to show out and be able to play in front of this crowd with all the people I'm going to school with. What were the different intensity levels playing, hosting E8s at your school versus the NCAA tournament, which you eventually played in?
So, I mean, that atmosphere was like unlike any other playing in Alfred, because like you said, you get to play in front of your classmates, you get to play in front of people you see every single day. So for me, it was the basketball program when we got there wasn't, I didn't see that at all, really, to be honest, until I got to like my junior year. We had some people that showed out to our games because we were, you know, in the playoff contention. But I saw it more with like the football team. My sophomore year, they had a deep run.
They were good.
And I still always remember this to this day. Yeah, really good. They went to the Elite Eight. So I was actually really close with the football guys because they were the ones that were down in the gym all the time. So when I was down there working out, it was just like, yo, I always saw him. We talked, chopped it up, and we had like mutual respect. So they ended up playing a playoff game at home. And the atmosphere was just like sick. There was people coming in from everywhere in this small town of Alford. And it was kind of like, for me, it was like inspiring because, you know, like these dudes are like the same as me. They came from small schools or big schools if they did, but they were, you know, going to class with me. They were the same dudes that I talked to all the time, but they were killing and they had mad people coming to their games. And it was just exciting. Everybody wanted to be there and everybody loved the football guys. So for me, I'm like, yo, this is what I want for the basketball program. Like, this is what I want to be able to create for like us, you know? And when we finally clinched that berth to be able to host, which is another crazy story. I could tell so many stories about this stuff. We actually played a game. I'll go quick into it. But we played a game on Saturday at Fisher. We went back to back and played a game. I think it was somewhere. And then we went to Fisher. Won. And then we went to Chipotle after the game. And we all got food poisoning on Saturday night into Sunday. So we were all down and out. And we had the game on Tuesday against Naz. And Naz is like, they've been nationally ranked at times. And probably in the top, probably the toughest team I played other than the Christopher Newport team that we lost to in the national tournament. My whole career in college. So we had to be on our stuff and we got to Sunday. I didn't practice Sunday, like seven or eight of us didn't practice Sunday. I didn't practice Monday and barely went through shoot around Tuesday. So I'm like, yo, I'm like the Jordan. It's like the Jordan flu game.
The flu game.
It was a food poisoning game, but I went out and like had my energy level. It was weird. Cause this connection between the mental health thing, I didn't have any energy because I was like, I was in bed for like 24 hours the day prior, just puking. I didn't do anything but just stay in bed and got up and didn't really have a lot of energy. So we got to the tip. There's like mad people in the gym because they're like, you know, if we win, we're going to, you know, we're hosting the E8s and whatever. And that atmosphere was crazy. They had caution tape on the fan section so that none of the guys would like step on the court.
Like the NBA.
It was like that crazy. Yeah, it was nuts. So. But I'm like sitting at center circle ready for the game and I'm just like chilling because I didn't have any energy. But for whatever reason, I tapped into like that like peak performance of like I was chilling, I was confident, and I was just playing and hooping. And I ended up having, I think, like 30 or 35. And I was just doing stuff that I was like, wow, I'm like bugging right now, like hitting tough shots, step backs, fades. I was talking, you know, I was talking crap to people. Like I was just on it. And we ended up clinching. And got to the EA tournament. It was just like a really cool feeling because we knew that we were going to have all those people back for the playoffs and we're going to be in our, you know, our atmosphere for, you know, those big games. So the championship was sick. It was like the same type of atmosphere, like even like raised up from that regular season game because there's people like up in, you know, in Alpha Gym, there's the top seats on the one side. They got like the blue. I don't even remember what color they are, like yellow or something crazy. But there were people up there, like standing on the railings, like people flooding in. And we played Fisher. So, I mean, Fisher's been like a nationally ranked program for I don't know how long and well respected around the country.
100%.
And they were, all they do is talk crap and throughout the regular season. And it was just like our rival. So we got into that game and obviously we won and it was just like an awesome feeling because, you know, the guys, all the guys that we knew and our classmates rushed the court and we were like going nuts. It was like sick atmosphere to be a part of. But I will say when we played in the tournament, we played against Christopher Newport at Christopher Newport, which is like a Division I.
Was that game crazy?
That was the second round of the NCAA tournament. Yeah, no, it was because the way Division III, for everybody that is listening that doesn't know this, the Division III tournament is different from the Division I. They have host sites. So, like, the host sites are at bigger, like, nationally ranked programs. You go to their site, and there's, like, four teams. So we went to Christopher Newport in Virginia. We took, like, an 8.5-hour bus ride down to Virginia, and there was four teams. So we played the game. Christopher Newport played the game after us, and then the next day we played each other. So it was, like, a little four-team tournament in one location. So it was basically like a home game for them and their sports down there. Like Christopher Newport's like, it's like a Division I school for them. Like the way that you'd see, like, you know, your big Division I local school, those types of fan support, like for us, it'd be like UAlbany, Siena, Like, that's how they support Christopher Newport down there.
Wow.
So we got into the atmosphere. I scored 45 the day before.
45.
And I'm getting, like, I had 45 in the first round. That was another.
The rim was just looking large to you? The hoop was looking, anything was falling?
That's another crazy story we could go into for. But we took that 8.5 hour bus ride the day before we practiced. I didn't make one shot in practice, not one. It was the craziest thing. Like, we went through shooting drills. We went through team drills. We went through stuff like after, and I just felt like crap. Like,
you were just
couldn't make a shot.
You were nervous?
My body was not. It was a combination of, like, at that point, it wasn't as much anxiety because at that point, like, I just had like a crazy game in the E8s.
Yeah.
Like, we won and I was feeling like confident, but it was kind of just like the expectation a little bit got to me, I would think. Like, I had just scored, like, you know, like, I was just expected to do a lot. And,
yeah,
like, I wanted that on my back, but it was, like, with my head, I'm just thinking, like, yo, we're taking an 8.5 hour bus ride down to Virginia. And it's, like, they haven't won an NCAA tournament game here in 20 years. Like, what if we get here? We freaking lose, you know? And I'm sitting there, like, I got to perform. And then on top of it, I hated traveling because I just wasn't the type of person. So we got off the bus and I was like falling in practice and like couldn't make a shot. And Coach Romano, who was our assistant at the time, was like, yo, are you all right? Like, are you good? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I just like not having a good day of practice. We were just on an 8.5 hour bus ride. But for whatever reason, I woke up the next day and my mind kind of cleared and I felt like unbelievable in warmups. And I came out and I hit like a super tough shot in the first opening possession. We ran this play where I came down, I would enter it into the high post to L. And then I would kind of have the option to go off like a handoff or he could kind of, at that point, I was just like, yo, throw it back to me because they had it all scouted.
Yeah.
So they knew what was coming. We called it, they scouted, they were like calling it out. So I'm like, yo, throw it back to me. So I was like going like this, throw it back to me. I was like 5 feet behind the line and I drilled a three in a dude's face to open up the game. So I was just like flowing a little bit. I was feeling myself. And then I just started hitting shots that I like never have even shot in my life. Like spin fades, turnarounds, like Steph Curry on the move, like threes. And I was just like, yo, I'm bugging. And
so
we
tough.
Got to the end of the game and I got subbed out and one of our grad assistants was like, yo, you have 45. And I'm like, for real? I'm like, I wasn't like counting or nothing. I just wanted to win at that point. And I'm like, I remember this to this day. I'm like, yo, you could have told me I would have went for 50.
50. I need the 50 ball.
Yeah. I'm like, yo, I need a 50 ball. You could have told me that. But at that point I was so locked in and I wasn't thinking about it. But back to what we were talking about Christopher Newport, got into that environment and it was like everybody was a Christopher Newport fan. We had our small little Alfred fan section, but like 20 people, 30 people behind the bench.
Yeah.
And then like their court is like an arena almost. So like they have like probably holds like, I'd say like probably 5,000-7,000 people in there.
That's lit.
So they probably had a good 4,000-5,000 people in there wearing blue and white. And they came out and just, they were hounding me from the start. Like they put their Division I transfer on me. They were face guarding me. I still ended up with 28, but
so you were still giving him cups. They just were the better team that day.
Of course. Yeah. They were a really good all around team with a lot of like senior leadership, older guys, fifth year guys. And we had, like I said, 11 freshmen. So it was like tough atmosphere. We had been going. I mean, that was probably one of our 28th or 29th game of the season at that point.
Yeah.
And we knew going in, we're going to have to play really, really well. And some of the guys didn't have it that day. And Brewster actually didn't play that game because he had a headache.
That
and
sucks.
I knew without him, it was going to be tough. So, but it was, again, the atmosphere was crazy. This is the last thing I'll say and then we can move on. I knew it was like crazy because I had like 50 or 60 year old men coming up to me asking for autographs.
Dang. That's crazy.
Yeah, I never forget it. The guy was like, yo, can I get your autograph? I'm like, I'm like, yo, I'm like in Virginia playing Division III basketball.
Yeah, you want my autograph.
Like, I'm bugging, but like, I don't feel like I'm like that hyped up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that crazy, but it was dope. It was a dope experience.
I just want to say something. When he's saying Brewster has headaches, it's not like Brewster's a soft little boy and it's just like, my head hurts. Like, he's having real migraines where he can't do anything. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Brewster is my guy. He already knows. Already knows that's my guy.
Yeah, I'm just clarifying to listeners. Let's take a quick break. Yeah. All right, we're back, and I want to talk about your post-college experience. Were you thinking professional basketball right off the rip, or what was your goals back then?
Yeah, so that was always, like, in the back of my head, but, while I was working out, because I didn't really know anything other than, basketball at that point. I didn't really do anything else other than play basketball. So it was kind of like I did want to do it, but it was also like, I don't know what else I'm going to do if I don't play basketball. So it was like, I got to pursue this. It was something that I aspired to be because I put so much time in and I knew the, challenges it took to get there, but I didn't really know much about that whole process in college. I just, saw like, professional basketball player. It sounds great. I could be that and, create, an image for myself and create a career for myself that not many people get to do. So it was something that I always aspired to be, but it's not as easy as people think behind the scenes, for sure.
Yeah. So let's talk about those behind the scenes. What was your professional basketball process? Is it like a recruitment thing? Teams are reaching out to you? Talk about that.
Yeah, so I actually, unfortunately, learned about this stuff while I was in the process. So that's something that if I were to give advice to kids that want to play that are in college now, like, definitely do your homework before you get to that part where you're about to go play, because there's a lot that goes into it. So when I got to the end of my career and had the career I did at that point, prior to that big year that I had, I didn't really know if I was going to be able to, because I didn't get a ton of time and wasn't really, going crazy up to that last year where I just went crazy. So once it came to that time, it was time to figure out, things like getting an agent. When you get to that point, you have to sign with an agent. You have to talk with them about all the little details in terms of, for example, if you're a player at a smaller school, like I was, and we are, that play at Alfred, like opposed to kids that go to these big high level Division I's and Division II's, you're probably not going to be seen and wanted as much.
100%.
And so what happens over there when you get into that type of stuff, the FIBA stuff, is each team has a certain amount of roster spots. So we'll say it's 13. 11 of those spots typically are for citizens of that country. So say it was, for me, it was Italy, right? So there are Italian, 11 of those guys on that team are Italian citizens. They have their citizenship. And then two of those guys on the team are considered American imports that don't have to have their citizenship. They're just on the team. They're able to come over as Americans. So what I mean by that is if you're going over there to try to get on a team, if you don't have that citizenship, instead of having 13 opportunities to make a team, you only have two on each team. So if you're a team and an owner over there, my first thought as an owner, as a owner of a professional club, is to go to Division I and Division II guys that are high level guys that have played in the biggest atmospheres. That's who they want, of course. So that whole process, when I figured that out, it was now for me to give myself the best opportunity was to get my citizenship, to figure out if I could. And my grandfather and grandmother came off the boat from Italy. So I'm Italian. So they were Italian citizens. So I had to go through the whole process of becoming an Italian citizen and getting my citizenship. So this process was ridiculous because you had to get paperwork. You had to get old birth certificates from the freaking early 1900s that are barely put together. I'm going to my grandparents' house. We're searching in these boxes to find these files, and then you got to go get them registered and whatever. So that process took forever. I finally got that done. And then when you're with the agent, they link you with a lawyer. The lawyer over there is the one that is the person that's going to help you get your citizenship. Mm-hmm. So I'm in college, you know, we're in college. I don't have much money, bro. I'm in college. Like, I'm not working. I'm playing college basketball.
Like $300
at Alfred. Right. $60,000 to go to school. Like, I already have debt and I don't really have a ton of money to be throwing around. Like, so when you get into that situation and you get on the phone with the lawyer and the lawyer's like, yeah, like, we can help you out. You know, you're going to have to come over and stay in Italy for 2 months. This is with no guarantee that you're going to make a team.
Wow.
This is what they're telling me. No guarantee that you're going to make a team. You could kind of like meet some clubs, meet some guys, go in and play. But while you're here, we have to file for your citizenship. We don't really know like if it's going to happen quick, but we're going to try and help you speed up the process. So I'm like, all right, like, now I got to think about going to Italy to try and make this a thing.
Betting on yourself.
And then the guy's like, yeah, it's right. Like, by myself as a 21, 22-year-old, just got done with school. Like, so like, do I want to do it? Of course I do. But like, bro, I'm a homebody still to this day. And, you know, like, I've definitely ventured out. But at that time, like, I'm not ready to fly to Italy by myself. I don't know how to speak Italian, none of that. So the guy was like, yeah, it's going to be like $5,000 to do all this. I'm like,
I don't got that.
So what do I do? I got to ask my parents for $5,000 to help me do this. Like, it's tough. Like, I don't got $5,000 in my pocket at that point. Like, this is when I'm like, yo, I wish NIL was a thing and I had some money in my pocket so I could make some money. But yeah, so I went through that process. And then the guy was, you know, telling me, my agent, that he was going to help me out and try and get this sped up without having to go over there. And eventually he just like didn't do what he was supposed to do. So I had a couple clubs reach out to him that were kind of interested, but without the Italian citizenship, like, it was really going to be hard for me to do it. So,
yeah.
And then COVID hit. So once COVID hit, it was kind of like, yo, I got to figure out my life because I'm out of school and I got to make money.
So at that point, it's just like, basketball is pretty much not in my worries. I got to find a different route.
Well, I mean, to this day, I still think about playing.
Oh,
but
really?
It's just different when you get out of college because, like, for me, again, in high school, I was in a program that, like, I'm playing with my best friends. I'm with coaches that love it just as much as we do. And then you go to college and things are different. You got to adjust. And then you get to the professional game. And I actually ended up playing on a semi-pro team up in the Northeast where we're from. And it was a cool experience, but it wasn't really like, I mean, it's like it's semi-pro basketball. There's more players that are – there's more fans at our college and high school games than there are at professional games.
Okay, I got
so
you.
So if you think about that, it's like, yo, it's really not like luxurious. You're traveling on a bus, like school bus. Like you're practicing like once a week, twice a week. Like it's not the same. You know what I mean? Like some of those teams did practice more, but with the team that I was on locally, it was just it was a little bit of a newer team and stuff like that. So cool, but it was just like now you're playing basketball and these people are worried about their money.
Yeah.
And you can see this now like in the NBA all the time. Like people are sometimes more concerned about the money than they are really playing the game and making relationships and doing it the right way. So it kind of got to a point where I was just like, yo, I want to play, but like I also want to be happy while I play and I want to have fun and enjoy it. And I have to kind of find the balance because at this point I'm not going to make a ton of money playing professional basketball.
Yeah.
People don't understand that either. You don't make a lot of money until you're 5, 6, 7 years into this whole process.
And
so for me, playing semi-pro
and like the top leagues to make a lot of money.
Exactly.
It's, people like to just put the professional label on their belt, but that doesn't mean a lot all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not very, like I said, it's not luxurious, especially like if you're playing semi-professionally, because that's even a, you know, like maybe a little bit lower than you would be overseas. So you're not getting paid much. And like I said, people are doing it for the wrong reasons, stuff like that. So at that point, it was kind of like I had to generally ask myself, yo, like what makes me happy? And at that point, you know, like in the back of my head, since I was a kid, I always knew I wanted to train. And that's kind of, you know, like what I ended up getting into next.
Yeah. So that's your current day. You're a successful trainer. You've worked out with guys like Tyrese Halliburton, Chet Holmgren, Andre Jackson, and Victor Oladipo. Those are all like established guys in the league today. What about your D3 experience allows you to be a successful trainer and improve those guys' games at the NBA level?
Well, it was kind of just like, I think the best thing about being a Division III player that has translated over into the training world is, you know, like when you get into division, being a Division III player, the rules are different than they are at a Division II, and then more specifically a Division I, with how much the coaches can work with you. So where I'm going with this is like every single day when I, you know, went to the gym, I had to almost work myself out. Like, you don't really have like coaches around to, they'll rebound for you, but like, there's not guys that, a lot of guys at Division III schools that really, like, really know how to teach development. And so for me, I loved working out. Like, I loved it. It was part of my everyday routine, and I just made me feel productive and stuff like that. So, you know, through having to do that every single day, I learned new ways to train by myself and would have to study. Like when I went back to my dorm room, I would flip on like the Xbox, go on YouTube and put in like Steph Curry highlights or Steph Curry workouts and just watch like for hours and hours, like all these different guys work out. And my biggest idol to this day is Kobe Bryant. And he was like a workaholic. That's who I like. The same way that, this is going to sound really corny, but I'm going to say it anyway. The same way that Kobe wanted to be MJ, like in some form, like I wanted to be like the Kobe of like Alfred, yeah. Division III, like the way that he worked. Yeah. Like I knew I wasn't it. Kobe Bryant, but I wanted like in terms of like the work ethic, the guy that just was like, yo, like I don't care what it takes. We're going to do this. And like, I don't care, you know, what it takes to do. So like, I think that was the biggest thing that helped me to this day is I had to learn and teach myself how to develop myself. And then I was able to kind of use my experience and translate it over into what I do now with other people. What it allows me to do is it allows me to tell these kids, like, if we're working on a certain move, like, yo, I've worked on the same move and here's what I felt. Can you feel the same thing? Mm. You know, if they're struggling with something. So I can give that experience to them. And that's what players respect the most is guys that have done it and can really like talk about like, you know, like what it feels like to do it. Like if you're messing up, like here's what you can do instead. Like that's what players want to be in the gym with. They don't want to be in the gym with guys that are just like, do this. And they're dribbling around cones and laying the ball and stuff like that, because it doesn't really translate. So that was kind of like the biggest thing where it's translated from the Division III experience into what I do now.
Yeah, that's great. Are you ever like starstruck when you're in the gym with those high level guys, or is this like a regular day for me?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, like growing up, when we played in front of a lot of big crowds, and when we played, we were really close with like Kevin Herter, who played at Shen, mm-hmm. who's obviously like doing really well in the league now. But we played him throughout my whole high school career. We were in different classifications, but our coaches used to really be close to each other. So we would scrimmage back and forth and we would hang out. Like they came over for the Super Bowl one year. We were all in the same room chilling. Like,
that's fire.
So I was around guys that were in, you know, that type of atmosphere. So I'm like, yo, and then my buddy, obviously Joe Cremo, who played at UAlbany at Villanova, now plays professionally overseas. He had NBA workouts. So like that being around those types of guys and then seeing where they were, like, you know, for Kev, he was at USA basketball. He was at Maryland. He was eventually drafted. Like, I'm like, yo, I hung out with these guys and I know who they are behind the scenes. Yeah. They're regular people, you know, like it's not like they're like these crazy people that are just like, you know what I mean? They're regular people. They put their pants on the same way I do when I wake up in the morning. And I've, you know, not for anything, but I've killed them numerous times when I played, you know,
respect.
Like, so I'm not necessarily like, yo, I'm like, oh my God, it's da 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 da. But, you know, you do get into some situations. Like for me, 2 years ago, I was out in California and I did this mentorship with a guy that's named Drew Hanlon. A lot of people know Drew Hanlon.
100%. He's
probably at the top of the industry for basketball training. Definitely is. He's located out in LA. He works with guys like Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid. I mean, the list goes on and on. He has, those guys are like his clients that he goes and flies to during the season and works all throughout the offseason with. So I got to go out there for like 3 days and kind of see his day by day, you know, work day. And so I went out there. I was staying in Hollywood. I went there by myself, woke up, drove down to a town probably like 20 minutes away from Hollywood, where he worked out guys in this small private school. Walked in, there was like five or six of us that were doing the mentorship program, and we got to at first kind of watch. So it was crazy when I was sitting there. It was like 8 a.m. He wasn't even there yet. But I'm sitting there, and I don't know if you know who Solomon Hill is, but Solomon Hill is a guy that's played in the league for numerous years. And to the naked eye, Solomon Hill is not like, you wouldn't know if you're not like a big basketball fan, you wouldn't know like who that was. But he walked in the gym, and it was kind of like just – and Drew wasn't even there yet, and Drew hadn't got there yet. And Solomon's like, does anybody know where Drew is? And we were like, no, I don't – no, we haven't even met him yet at this point. We just talked on Zoom calls like we are. And he's like, all right, like I'm going to just go get a haircut. I'll be back later. But this is like his day by day. Like Solomon Hill, if Solomon Hill ever walked to the gym in you know, where it's Schenectady, where I work out, I'd be like, yo, what can we do for you? And Drew's like, yeah, like he's like, yo, I'll be back. Like they're just regular. Like that's how it is out in LA for them. So moral of the story, we're in the gym, and I saw in 3 days, this is a list I'm not even making up, I swear to God. I saw Victor Oladipo, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Trae Young, DeMar DeRozan, Chet Holmgren, Amari Bailey, who now plays for the Hornets, who's at UCLA, Pat Williams, who's on the Bulls, Myers Leonard, who was in the league, got in a little trouble and then was back. A kid that played for the Chinese national team, who I still talk to a little bit here and there to this day. And then a kid that played at Ohio State, his name's Devin Royal, who'll be a freshman there this year. And then I got an experience. I got the opportunity to have an experience. So there's a guy that used to actually train, Kobe and his daughter before they passed away. His name is Alex Bazell. One of the best guys I've ever met in the industry. I met him at a clinic in New York City. He was out there, so I hit him up. I'm like, yo, I'm out here with Drew. He's really close to Drew. And I'm like, yo, is it okay if I pop into some of your workouts while you're out here? He's like, yeah, whatever. So he sent me the Addy. I pulled up. I'm in the middle of California. I've never been to this high school. I'm trying to find a gym. I'm in the high school asking janitors, like, yo, where's the gym at? So I walk in. I'm the only dude in the gym. It's him and two other dudes, and he's working out Caris LeVert from the Cavs. So
that's one of my favorite
dope,
players,
right? Like, yeah, Caris is like a pretty good NBA player. So like you see him, you're like, this is dope. So I pulled up a chair, was literally right on the sideline. I got the videos on my phone to this day. It's still like every time I go by him, I'm like, this is dope. But I'm sitting there watching, only the guy in the gym. And then after he's done with Caris, he comes up, Alex does, and he was like, yo, he's like, appreciate you coming and stuff. And I was like, yo, appreciate the opportunity to come watch. He's like, I'm going to work Caris out for a little while longer. I think Kai is coming. So if you could let him in, I appreciate it. So I'm like sitting there and it didn't register me at first. And eventually I sat back down. I'm thinking, I'm like, yo, he's talking about Kyrie Irving. Like,
that's
I'm like,
insane.
This is crazy. Cause Kobe's my guy. Like Kobe to this day, like I said, is like my number one idol ever. Like other than my father and, Coach DePere in high school, like Kobe's like my guy. So, and Kyrie's like his little brother almost, and he looked up to him the same way. So I always loved the way Kyrie played, his skill and everything. So they're in the middle of the workout and I hear knocking on the door. So I go over, I open the door. Who's on the other side of the door? Kyrie.
That's crazy.
It's like crazy. I like looked him in the face. I'm like, what's good, bro? I like dapped him up. I'm like walking away. I'm like in my head, I'm like, yo, that's Kyrie Irving. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, That was the only time, to get back to your question, that was the only time I think I've ever been kind of starstruck. I played it super cool, but I was definitely like, yo, that's like these guys are like the top of the top guys in the league. Like
in the world.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's like one of my favorite guys. So that experience when I went out in LA was like insane. It was like, it just got to show you like the real detail of those guys on a daily basis and how hard they go. It's like amazing.
Yeah, it's different. It's different for real.
Yeah.
So we're gonna end with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. You ready for rapid fire? All right. Favorite artist?
Let's do it. I'll say Drake.
After that mid-album, Drake?
He said mid-album. You know, I was a big Meek Mill guy, and people will make fun of me for that, but he was my guy that I used to listen to, because I know people like joke about Meek and all the things with him and Drake, but Meek was like, I used to listen to his stuff heavy ever since I was in high school, and he just was like my pregame guy. He was in my headphones before every game.
Word.
Him and Drake, I would say, are probably my two favorite.
That's fire. Favorite movie?
Batman, Dark Knight.
Heard. Best player you've trained?
Best player I've trained. Jeez, you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
Oh, best skilled player? I don't want to say. I guess I will. I would say probably Victor Oladipo was super tough. Chet is going to be really, really good.
Rookie of the year. I'm going to say Chet. I'm putting my vote in now. Rookie of the year.
Him or Vic. The reason I say that is there's probably guys that are more polished, but like he's a legit 7 foot and can do literally like he looks like he plays like he's 6'3". Like he just does. He handles it. He shoots it, and he's super smooth. So I would say probably him.
I'm a Thunder fan, so you're making me smile right now.
Yeah, he's gonna be tough if he can stay healthy, man. All
right, this starting five edition, we're gonna do the best players you've played against, but strictly in college, if you remember all of them.
Oh, of course I do. What?
And the listeners might not understand or know who these guys are, so just say like a sentence about what made them so tough.
I'll give you a little background of each one. So let's start out. I'm not going to do this in order because it's going to take me a little bit, but I would say – I don't want to mess this up. I'm going to get in trouble. People will start hitting me up. So I would say definitely a kid by the name of Marcus Carter who played at Christopher Newport. He was a Division I transfer. He guarded me, actually, in our NCAA tournament game. But I have a lot of respect for him. We actually stay connected. We stayed connected after college. I haven't talked to him in a while, but he's one of them. He was like a two guard, so I'll give you him. See, this is tough for me because I was like Kobe was. Like, I didn't anybody that wasn't on my team, I was like an enemy with. Like,
I feel you.
I was cool with them, but, like, I was like, yo, I don't care who you are. I'm just going to kill you. But I would say there's a kid from Nazareth who played like an undersized four. His name was Jake Bergio.
Okay.
Who I played actually semi-professionally against. He was like six, probably like my same height, like 6'5", 6'4", 6'5". He played a little bit different of a game than me. He was kind of like could shoot it from like 15 feet. Go downhill, score around the rim, super really, really good with his footwork and stuff. Naz is like a really good program. So
that's crazy.
I would say him.
It's still around today that footwork they have. Was it the same coach, Broderick?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's he's locked in.
He's
that's
such a, I mean, bro, we had our battles. Like, obviously, like I said, anybody that I played against, but I have a lot of respect for that program. They do a really good job with their program, for 100%. Sure. That was probably one of the toughest teams that we played, if not the toughest team. Let's see. I'm not going to remember his name, and I feel crazy because that's like a starting five. But there was a guy that we played at Nazareth. I didn't really get to play a ton against him. I got in a game against him. I'm just going to mention his name. He was a dude from Naz. He was the biggest human being I've ever seen play Division III basketball. He was like, he looked like he was 37, damn, 35 with a grown man body, like bodybuilder. He was like catching it in the post. I'll never forget it. He would like drop step or like back you down twice, hit you in the chest, and he would just like dunk. And I'm like, bro, who is this guy? Why is he here?
Why are you at Nazareth?
Yeah, he was killing. That's, I got to remember his name. I will. So let's go and I'll give you names because we got to get to five. So we're at Bergio. I got Marcus Carter. We got Naz, Fisher, Ryan Henderson. Ryan Henderson was actually a kid that we played in the EA championship who was on the first team with me. Similar to Jake, he was like a four man. He shot like over 60% from the field. He just like finished a bunch of stuff around the rim.
That's tough.
Super solid. Yeah, he was good. I'll go actually non-conference here. Kid from Brockport. His name was, oh my God, I'm going to blank on this. I think his name was Justin Summers, actually. I don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure.
I know you're
he was
about.
Very similar to those guys at in the E8. But Brockport, have you guys played Brockport? You have, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're super, super. Like a lot of those guys, they get a ton of super athletic kids there. 100%. Justin was like the same way. He played like a four, but he was like 6'5", and he could jump out of the gym. And he got up and rebounded, blocked shots. He was in transition playing like downhill, and he was super tough. I liked his game a lot. He actually ended up getting hurt in the game we played it, but he was like I think he was like first team like all Northeast the year after I left.
Yeah,
he was good.
So, I know you know Devontae and Jahadi from Lansingburg. They were on Justin Summers' team. So at Brockport, I used to follow them, and Summers was really tough, very athletic.
Yeah, he was good. I was impressed with him because we didn't play. You know, like the EA is really solid, but like the Suniac probably tends to get a little bit more of like an athletic type of style of play, and Brockport especially. And he was impressive. So I'm at Bergio. I'm picking like the same position. It's fun. Those are the guys that kill in that league, though.
Yeah.
Bergio, Ryan, Justin, and then Marcus. So I got to give you one more. A point guard.
Yeah. Give me a point.
Yeah. And we're gonna talk about point guards. I didn't play against who's on my team, but Scotty, I always say Scotty was like, he's my point guard since high school and in college. He's always been. He was just like a blast to play with because he's just like super competitive, very undersized, knew how to pass, and just was a team guy. And so, like, that type of guy was really good. I think the last guy that I will name from Naz, his name was Brendan Wind. I don't know if you played Brendan or not, but Brendan was from Naz. And just like Jake, they're super good. You know from playing Nazareth. They're all really good within, like, 5 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
Like, they shoot that little floater pull-up. I don't know if they're the same way now, but that's how they were. Like, they would run those handoffs and back doors, and Brendan would just get to, like, right below the foul line, and he would just hit a pull-up, like, every single possession. And I would literally look at Scotty and be like, bro, are you going to stop him, or do I have to guard him? You know what I mean? But they were really, really good at, like, getting to their spots and scoring. They were really, really good at it. So I'll say him.
Credit to that Naz coach because it looks like – when you're watching the game from the outside, it's like, how can you not stop a dribble handoff, jump to 2 feet, go up? But that's
a lot of, you know, what's funny is, a lot of their principles too, you know, I started to watch like Villanova pretty close after I got out of school. And this is back to my training, but a lot of the stuff that they did, I took with me when I started to train, which is actually hard for me to admit because I hated them during college. But I have a ton of respect because the way they play basketball, especially for people that aren't as athletic, they maximize kids because, like, they play off of 2 feet. And what happens when you get on 2 feet is you give yourself, like, a bunch of options and you're under control. Like, you say a lot of guys that aren't athletic go up and try and jump with people and they're just, like, not really effective. But those guys are so good, like you said, getting to 2 feet and just shooting, like, shots where you're like, bro, like, I can't stop it. I don't know what to do.
But – I appreciate your time, Don. It's been a great conversation. I'm looking forward to talking to you more.
Absolutely. Anything you need, you already know.
Yes, sir.